Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening and welcome to Mud Toe at Midnight. I am your host, Mud Toe Sasquatch. I have played my flute and I have offered sacred fire in the four directions. Please join me in sacred ceremony. I speak as spirit moves me to speak, and I invite you to do the same by calling me at 646-595-3440. And now, Mud Toe at Midnight.
Good evening, friends and neighbors all around the world, brothers and sisters. I love you all. Well, most of you. No, I love you all. I'll go ahead and do that tonight. I'm feeling pretty good. I'm here back home in my small little hometown in the Midwest, having returned from a sojourn to my large city in the Midwest, where I once lived, and I'm trying to get back to living. As the longest period of time I've spent away from home base here, 11 days in a row, I was out in the world, and now I have returned. I'm back in my own room, the roof over my head, and a belly full of food that my mom cooked for me. In my car, there's a tank of gas, and I have $67 in my wallet. So I've got the world by the testicles. And thank you for joining me here tonight. I want to talk a little bit more about my trip to Missouri last week that I reported on during my show while I was there. So I do want to get back to that, but there are a couple of items of old business I wish to take care of first. This isn't exactly old business. I guess it's a little bit old, but I wanted to report that Chief Iggy Hoopwatcher has a new show here on the channel. It's called Lunchtime Wisdom, or maybe it's just Lunch Wisdom. I really should look these things up before I start the show. But it's about lunch and wisdom. And it occurs on Tuesday in the early afternoon, around lunchtime. And that's what it says on the little promo, is lunchtime. So I guess it doesn't have a specific starting time, just sometime around when lunch starts. So if you're having lunch and you want to hear a little wisdom, a little bit of Iggy's wisdom, I always enjoy Iggy's wisdom, tune into the With Insights channel of Blog Talk Radio, and there you will find it. Iggy's regular show, still on Mondays at 6 p.m. And here am I, Mudso at Midnight. Tonight's on Friday or Saturday, depending on how you count the time. I believe that the night belongs to the day it follows, so for me this is Friday, but if it's a different day for you, that's just fine with me. What else do I need to take care of? A couple of weeks ago was 9/11. And I meant to talk about it on my show. I've avoided talking about it on the show in the past just because everybody talks about 9/11 on 9/11. But I thought I could get away with it because this year my show wasn't on 9/11, it was on 9/12. So I figured I could safely talk about it without being accused of being a bandwagon jumper. But for whatever reason, I got sidetracked and I ended up not talking about 9/11 at all. I talked about some things that were totally different. So I'm going to go, I don't want to spend a whole show on it, because I want to talk a bit about Great Council. But let me start, I'm adjusting my position here. And a little stitch, a little bit of muscle spasm. I'm going to go back to a time I went, this is how long ago, this is about 10 years ago now. There was a time when Mud Toe lifted weights. And I was lifting weights and I started to get some soreness in my back and I decided I would tough it out and just continue to lift weights. And then I woke up one morning and couldn't get out of bed. And my back has bothered me from time to time since then. Not doing anything too terrible. It's just a lower lumbar strain. But every once in a while I get those back spasms, kind of like the ones that Tiger Woods complains about so much. And I'm having some of them now, and it makes it difficult for me to get into a comfortable position to do this show. But I will endeavor to do so because I wish to entertain you for this half an hour you've chosen to spend with me. And not hear me groaning over my old injuries. Let's try this. This should work. Okay. Now, what was I going to talk about? Yes, 9/11. As the history of 9/11, I mean, it's like 13 years we've been having it, and every year I become more and more concerned that it's becoming a sort of a nationalistic, jingoistic rallying cry along the lines of "Remember the Alamo." You know, remember 9/11. The slogan is "Never forget," and I think that's accurate. I don't think we should forget the people who lost their lives. I think that those people's—it's hard to say sacrifice because they didn't. I mean, they were killed, and they didn't. I mean, as has often been said, they just went to work that day. That's all they did was they just went to work that day. I think that the deaths of those people are being used in a way that's not appropriate. It's a way that's not, that doesn't honor, we're not honoring their memory so far as we're using it to rile people up against would-be or perhaps even, let me say this, okay. Everything that's happened between 9/11 and now, we've been basically at war ever since, and I think that's not an accident. I think there is intention from the people who actually run the world, not the elected leaders, but the ones with all the money who actually run things. That it's for whatever reason they've decided it's to their advantage for there to be for the United States to be engaged in perpetual wars throughout the world, and we continue to use the same tactics that we've used in the past in these kind of wars against, you know, decentralized forces. It's not a country, it's not a government. It's just a bunch of guys with rifles. And we bring our superior technology and our superior firepower to bear, and they go and hide, and when we're gone, they come back out. The only way that strategy works is if we kill everybody. You can never kill everybody. And what can happen is for every person you kill, two more will emerge because of recruiting, particularly in the Middle East. That's affected because of the lingering after effects of colonialism. Well, I can hear people turning off their radios all over the world as I'm saying this. Please bear with me. I won't stick on this very long. But when we go there with our bombs and our planes, that gives our enemies the opportunity to say, "See, here they come. We said they would. They're going to come here, and they're going to, you know, they're just like they did hundreds of years ago, and they're going to, you know, they're going to take your possessions, and they're going to take your culture, and they're going to, you know, take your women, and they're going to take everything and make it their own." And we told you this is exactly what's happening. So the latest incarnation of this is ISIS, and they're, you know, thumbing their nose at us, you know, killing people and sending us videos. And they go, "Oh, don't they know we'll attack them?" Well, yeah, they know we'll attack them. They want us to attack them. Makes them stronger if we attack them. The way to combat this is to go after the people who are paying ISIS, but we're not going to do that because there would be repercussions for our economy that are, you know, far beyond anything that I'm prepared to discuss or even understand. So all that in a nutshell is, let's just be careful of all this rah-rah, remember the Alamo, never forget. Yes, it's good to remember the people who died. But remember also all of the people who died since, the soldiers and the civilians who died in this ongoing war. Let's not forget them and the fact that they've died basically for nothing. Guess that's all I have to say on that subject. I could spend a half an hour talking about that, but I could just get unreeled further and further into conspiracy theories, and I don't know how any of this stuff works. I'm just a guy. I don't pretend to have any sort of special insight, and the point of this show is really not to be political. I'm supposed to be a philosopher, not a politician. This is, I guess, the philosophy of waste is bad. And I think this ongoing philosophy, or this philosophy of ongoing war, is wasteful. We lose people, we lose treasure, we use lose. We lose attention. We lose all these things that we better apply towards making this a better world, towards ending hunger, towards ending poverty, towards making a society that's more responsive to the needs of ordinary people. And we're just not getting that because the war is too important, because the enemy is much too important that the enemy be vanquished. And we have to turn our attention to that. But what's not said is that we spent 30 years between the French and us, we spent 30 years trying to vanquish the Viet Cong, and they're still there. The Brits spent, 50, 60 years trying to vanquish the IRA. The IRA is still there. They're a political organization now, haven't taken up the guns for a while, but they're still there. They're still running Northern Ireland. How long has the Israelis, the one government that cares absolutely not a bit about what anybody thinks of them, who will go into other people's countries to hunt down their enemies, they've gone 50 years against various Palestinian terror organizations and haven't made a dent. And then we've gone up against Al-Qaeda for 15 years, and Al-Qaeda's still there. We're just getting Al-Qaeda fatigue. Al-Qaeda isn't as effective as it used to be in making us afraid, and making us say, we need to forget about ourselves, and sublimate ourselves to this sort of group need to defeat these people who are coming to get us. It's been so long since 9/11 that we've started to not believe that Al-Qaeda is coming to get us. It's been too long. We're too far removed from it. So we need a new threat. And that's when the power elite came up with ISIS. Provide us with that threat. Here comes ISIS, and they're going to come through our open borders, and they're going to poison our water, and they're going to there's all these things, the weaponized salmonella or whatever it is, the bad stuff they're going to put in our reservoirs and kill us. They're going to blow up all of our buildings, and they're going to, it's exactly the same song and dance that was put out there when 9/11 happened. Those things never occurred. I can't say that it's impossible that they would occur, but they never did occur, and so we discounted the possibility, and that's what made it necessary to come up with a new enemy. This is Al-Qaeda time is 10, and they're going to come. This time they really are going to come and poison our water and spread disease. The sarin, they're going to bring all their sarin and dump it all over the place. It's a different approach is required. The approach of firepower, bringing firepower to bear, has not worked, will not work. Just continues to make things worse. Just my opinion. Just a dumb philosopher's opinion. Okay, now I'm going to get off of that subject. And let's give you Great Council news. I went to Great Council. The Great Council of the Nimenha, which is held every year in the wilds of Missouri, southwest Missouri, about a 13-hour drive from my large city in the Midwest. I bundled in a van with Chief Iggy Hoopwatcher and with Katie Singing Eagle, who are both chiefs of the Nimenha, as I am. And we drove to represent our chapter house at the Great Council. And it's pretty much what you would expect it is. It's the national, governing is probably a strong word, but it's a national gathering of Nimenha from around the country. Around the country. And around the world would be a little bit bold to go there to discuss matters that concern the national church organization. Now, the Nimenha is a church. It's a adopted Native American church and philosophy. Now, before I get too much further, I should say I am not an expert on this. I am repeating my own probably very flawed understanding of what Nimenha is all about. If you're really curious about it, the person to ask would be Vicky Hoopwatcher, who is the public relations chief, and you could find his contact information on the Nimenha website. So just take this is just a layperson's description of what's going on, and I'm not going to go into too terribly much detail because I'm not qualified. If you're really interested in hearing about this in a lot of detail, you need to talk to public relations. I'm not qualified to speak to it in that at that level. As I understand it, Nemenha is a confederation of healers, people who use mostly ancient methods. Plants, stones, crystals, oils, physical means, the manipulation of limbs, all things that have come from ancient wisdom. And they've brought them into today and are using them to heal people. Now, the problem with this is that many, if not most, jurisdictions in our country want to slow that kind of thing down. You know, they want to license people, or they just want to outright ban things that aren't, you know, covered under medical licensure. Medical establishment wants to file lawsuits. You know, people charged with practicing medicine without a license, and there is protection afforded to naturopathic practitioners. If you are practicing such things as a part of your religion, as part of the practice of religion, then the government can't touch you. That's in the law. It's in the federal law and the Charter of the United Nations. The religions of indigenous people, and as Native American, we're not first peoples. I don't know. I'm sure there are people in the Nemenha organization who are. I'm not one of the first peoples. I can't trace my lineage to the people who came across the land bridge and were here before any other people were. My relatives, my ancestors came over here from Europe. But I and everyone in the Nemenha have been adopted into a Native American tradition. So we can claim, and because of other things that have been done in setting up the church, we can claim the protection of these laws that protect indigenous people. Now, why did I choose to get involved? Because I am not that sort of practitioner. I don't do the crystals or the oils or anything like that. I speak and I write. At the time I got involved with Nemenha, I was suspecting that people who speak and write at some point in the near future were going to need the sort of protection practitioners need now. I think that speaking and writing is, you know, is sort of a tradition that's very highly thought of in our society. So the people who would want to silence people like me would be loath to do so in an open manner, because it flies in the face of the traditions that hold our society together. And as much as the elite wants to take away the liberties of ordinary people in society, they still need those traditions in order to hold society together. It's a matter of gradually taking away the freedoms and the resources and convincing people that it's a good thing to continually be doing with less and less. So it's not something that would happen tomorrow or the next day. But at some point, I believe that people who want to speak as spirit moves them, as I do, will face the sort of oppression that my brothers and sisters who practice naturopathic healing methods, if I'm saying that right, those who are those practitioners of the old ways, of the old medicine, that one day I will experience the same sort of pressures that they are experiencing, even as the oppressions continue to rise on them. Now, the cynic in me would say, well, it doesn't make any difference. You know, the government could withdraw that protection at any time. And in fact, they could. I'm just saying, as I guess I already said, I'm covering the same ground here. I don't think they would for some period of time, just because it behooves them to, again, talking about the elite, it behooves them to maintain at least the edifice of liberty, so they won't come after freedoms. They will come after religious protection and freedom of speech quite as aggressively as they might come after other things, at least not until some time goes by. And then once the final assault on liberties takes place, everybody's going to be in the same boat. But for now, and I think I thought that this is what I thought when I first got involved with Nemenha about 6 years ago. And today I feel even more strongly about that than I did then. So that's the reason I do this radio show. That's the reason I write on my blog. That's the reason I'm working on my book, which are just books of stories and just a blog of stories, things that are happening to me. But there are things that Spirit has moved me to write. And I believe that those words are being directed to people who need to hear them for whatever reason. It's not even that so much wisdom is pouring out of me, so I'm just writing dopey stories. But the somewhere in that is encoded wisdom that's coming from someplace else, that comes to me from Spirit or from the ancients or from wherever it comes from. And then that goes to other people and gets decoded. So it doesn't have any, I'm just the conduit. It doesn't have anything to do with me. Except I'd like to think the stories are sort of entertaining so that people who maybe aren't the ones who are supposed to be receiving it will at least still enjoy reading it. So anyway, I went to Great Council. I've never been to Great Council before. And it was 13 hours in the van. And unfortunately, that 13 hours in the van kind of screwed me up and made it impossible for me to enjoy the experience fully. You know, my sleep was screwed up, my eating was screwed up, my moods were screwed up, my relationship with my medications was screwed up. Although we did have, we were ahead of the game on our accommodations, because sometimes you have to get a tent and sleep out on the ground. But in this case, we had a house to sleep in. It's called a Cobb House. And at first I thought that was somebody's name. But actually, it's a building material. Cob is an ancient building material made from straw and clay and sand, and it's incredibly energy efficient. And the walls of this house are made like a 12 inches thick of this cob. And they say that it controls the temperature of the interior of the house to within plus or minus 10 degrees. In other words, on the hottest summer day, the coldest winter night, temperature isn't going to vary inside the house more than 10 degrees from the average, which is pretty incredible. I'd love to test that sometime. Now, this is a big, it was a small house that our host there had built it for him and his wife to live in after they'd first gotten married. And then they had a child and they needed a better house, so he went and built them a bigger house on another part of the property. But the original house, the smaller one, stayed there. And now it gets used mostly for occasions like the Great Council. And, you know, it's a big central room and some smaller rooms in the back. But what it had, and I am just so grateful for this, what it had was running water and a shower and a flush toilet. And that is just, those are just such gifts for a city boy like myself. It kept the weekend from being a complete disaster for me, because I always do. Whatever else happened, I could crawl back to the Cobb House and get to that shower and get to that flush toilet. It was amazing because they have nothing on the assembly grounds. They didn't have anything except outhouses. And I managed to time my various eliminations so that I never had to use one of the outhouses. I was always able to get back to the Cobb House and use the flush toilet. So that part of the experience I didn't get to have. But I did get to sit in the meetings, although I was in such a disturbed mental state I couldn't ever sit in them for very long. I get very claustrophobic when I'm upset. So I had to get out of the meeting hall and just sort of wander around outside. But the good thing about that, or the nice thing about that, was that we were out in the forest, so I was able to wander around amongst the trees. Although there was a plague of black flies, I got bitten up pretty bad, but it was a nice place to, as places to be upset go, the woods is a nice place to be upset, and I'd be able to diffuse those emotions. I did manage to stay calm enough to sit through a couple of classes. And one of them I think will be very important for me is the class on the medicine bundle. And what that is just a thing that the shaman keeps his some sort of spiritual, so items that have spiritual significance. It's his medicine. It's the stuff he carries with him. And I thought it didn't really go any further than that. But I took this class, and evidently it's part of what makes our religion an actual religion in the eyes of the government is one of the elements, at least, is something called a pattern language. It's something like the crucifix is in Christianity, that everybody, you see that cross, and everybody in the world, doesn't matter what culture you're from, doesn't matter what your language is, it's just about everybody in the world recognizes a crucifix and knows what it means. And it stands for the crucifixion of Christ or fighting vampires, but mostly the crucifixion of Christ. So there are certain patterns in Nimenha which are not so well known because we don't have the promotion that the Christians have. But it helps with recognition of the religion for the people who subscribe to it to have something in their bundle that or for that bundle to subscribe to the pattern language. In other words, to have these certain things that Nimenha believe in are reflected in the bundle. And I hadn't done that. I thought it was just stuff that had spiritual meaning to me. So I'm working on tearing apart my bundle and putting it back together so that I have a representation of the pattern language. The idea is the main pattern is the medicine wheel, common to most Native American cultures and then to other cultures around the world, have some idea of the hoop and its relationship to life, the circle of life or whatever, you know, however you want to say it. But you know, basically, it's a circle with points that point in various directions, and you know, different traditions have you know different points, and points meaning different things. In Nimenha, if you start at the west point, and the west point is represented by the buffalo, and the buffalo is standing in the ocean, and the waters of the ocean represent all the knowledge of the earth. So the west point, the west door, as it's called, represents seeking counsel from other people and from things on earth. All the knowledge of the earth is represented at the west point. And then you go around, the Nimenha medicine wheel has four points, the four compass points, west, north, east, and south. The north point is heavenly beings and spirits, it's represented by the wolf. The east point is sees far, and that's represented by the eagle. And then the south point is looks within, and that's the mouse. And each one of those points also has a color represented, but I never did much with the colors, so I've never memorized them. But I think if the point of it is I'm supposed to be able to teach the medicine wheel from what's in my soul, I'd better learn what the colors are. So get into that. And my show is almost over. How did that happen? It just always goes so fast. But my task now, my first task is to resuscitate my medicine bundle and make it reflect what it's supposed to reflect for Nimenha, respectable Nimenha, especially chiefs of Nimenha. So I'm going to do that, and I'll report back to you my progress next week. And I'm sure there'll be all sorts of wonderful things that happen in the world and in my life that I'll be able to talk to you about. I thank you very much for joining me this evening, and I hope your week is a pleasant one. Good night.